On behalf of the Children's Safety Network, I want to welcome all of you to the first webinar of 2008, Bullying Prevention, the Role You Play. My name is Erica Streit-Kaplan. I'm a Technical Assistance Specialist with CSN, and I'm going to facilitate the call today. For those of you who are not familiar with the Children's Safety Network, or CSN, we're funded by HRSA's Maternal and Child Health Bureau to assist state health departments, especially maternal and child health and injury prevention professionals, in preventing injuries and violence to children and adolescents. The goal for this webinar is to provide state programs with information about bullying prevention, the Stop Bullying Now campaign, and how states have integrated bullying prevention into their existing work. We've reserved the first few minutes of the call for an orientation to the online technology that we're using, which is called Illuminate. If you're on the phone line and cannot view the presentation via Illuminate, please call Karen at 617-618-2726 or email kbrady@edc.org. This information is a little different than what was on the last email, so I'll repeat it. That's Karen at 617-618-2726. Or kbrady@edc.org. Alternatively, if you're having trouble with Illuminate, you can download the presentation slides from the CSN website and just try to follow on the phone line. The address is www.childrensafetynetwork.org, and there's a link to the webinar slides at the bottom right of the homepage. If you are in Illuminate, you may want to change your view options so you can see the slides on your whole screen using the whiteboard feature. To do this, please go up to the icons located on the upper left corner of Illuminate. Just beneath the View button, you will see the third icon in, which is a white square with a pull-down menu arrow. Please click on the arrow, and in the pull-down menu, select the Whiteboard Only option. I also want to let you know that the audio for this webinar is from this phone line, not through Illuminate. And as I said, in order to avoid background noises, all of the participants' phone lines will be muted during the call. If you would like to ask a question, you may type it into the direct messaging window in Illuminate. To do this, type your message in the text box on the left side of the page. If you're viewing the slides with the whiteboard view, you may need to change your view back to the default in order to see the text box window. After we hear from all of the speakers, I will read the questions that are typed in the direct messaging window. If we run out of time, the speakers and I will respond to the remaining questions via email. Please note that the session is being recorded and the audio will be available on the internet after this event. Those are all of our technical instructions. So now it's my pleasure to introduce our first speaker, Captain Stephanie Brin from the Federal Maternal and Child Health Bureau. Stephanie will summarize current research on the scope and impact of bullying. She will also describe how you can utilize the National Stop Bullying Now campaign. Stephanie?
Thank you, Erica. I want to just move to my second slide, where this is what we'll talk about today, kind of a quick refresher on what bullying is, Bullying 101, taking a look at the state laws now that are out there addressing bullying, and the development of the Stop Bullying Now campaign. Hopefully many of you have heard about it. And then the resources that are available to you to use in the community or in your school. Now, bullying is aggressive behavior, and it's usually repeated. It occurs in a relationship where there's an imbalance of power, and all three of these need to be present when we talk about bullying. And today we know there's a lot of bullying going on in the schools and communities, and it's not okay. Now, this study that was done by Nansel and Overpeck and others in 2001 took a look at students in grades 6 through 10. And as you can see, the prevalence numbers are high. And then when you tally the ones together that are being bullied or being active in a bullying situation, about 30% of our students are involved in bullying. And that's a pretty high number. we wanted to look at the health consequences, so we saw a study where we took a look at children who were being bullied and children who were not being bullied as they responded. And we took a look at the headaches and the sleep problems and the anxiety and the tenseness and the feeling unhappy and the depression. So we saw this as an important topic to address, and I'll describe why we got involved in it in just a second. Now, the states, when we began looking at this project of developing a campaign for bullying prevention, there were zero states with state laws. And today in 2008, as you can see by the slide, and you can take a look for your state, there are numerous states that have laws addressing bullying. The darkest states are the ones that do have laws on the books. We'll talk a little more in just a second about that. So some of the common elements of state laws addressing bullying, you can see they look at the definition and try to define bullying as it will work in their state or as it will be addressed. And listing of policy requirements in 23 of the states. And common policy recommendations deal with reporting, investigating, disciplinary or consequences for children who bullied, guidelines for employee training, and I think this is really important, and I think we're going to see adjustments being made in states where they realize that education and training is so key and so important in schools and in communities, and they will address education and training. So I hope a lot of you are on the webcast today to hear more about that. And then parental notification if a bullying situation is happening. And so this article by George Srebstein from the Children's National Medical Center compiles information about bullying, and so we put it in here for you to take a look at and see what your state is doing and see what your state is saying must be done. Now, you can imagine that the Columbine High School catastrophe helped us decide to do something about bullying from the Maternal and Child Health Bureau here at HRSA. And so we know that after that, a lot of schools and institutions and health and safety organizations and education organizations were scrambling on what to do. And we heard a lot of information about how they didn't know what to do, and so that's one of the reasons we developed the campaign. Again, this is the article that was the first major article I referred to a minute ago. This was a guidepost for us when we saw that it really was something that is not okay and needs to be addressed. And then when we heard that no one knew what to do, or at least a lot of people didn't know what to do, we used this as a guideline as we addressed the campaign. Also, the U.S. Secret Service report, along with the U.S. Department of Education on school shootings, many of you have probably read this. It's still available in the literature to be read. And the school shooters didn't just snap. They usually told someone. They had a plan. And it was decided that it was important to break down barriers and to really help and educate both students and adults about this problem of called bullying. And this report also mentioned that in 2/3 of the cases, the students who were the perpetrators had been bullied or threatened or attacked. And so we felt compelled, and this was another guidepost. Okay, I'm going to go back one. We reviewed existing research. We importantly talked to our target audience of children, ages 9 to 13. We also talked to teenagers. We talked to adults in focus group settings across the United States. And then we chose about 25 youth from the ages of 9 to 17 to really make sure we kept on track and really would get a campaign that would be important and one that would address how they hear and view messages. And so the youth expert panel were very important to us. And also our 80 plus members of the steering committee and partnership organizations who were so valuable and who are also listed on our website. So the launch was in 2004, and the Surgeon General of the United States Public Health Service was there along with our administrator, all the youth expert panelists, the 25 of them, were able to come, including also a Washington Redskins player and Erica Harold, who actually used bullying as her platform when she was Miss America. Now, quickly, to take a look at the resources that we have for you, and it's on a website that will be described and the web address given to you. Hopefully, you already know about it, but just real quickly, the website is actually our hub. It is where you can receive information and load and download posters and tip sheets. We have resources for youth and adults. The adult sector that we actually focus grouped and continue to guide us are educators, health and safety and mental health people, law enforcement and juvenile justice, youth development leaders, people who work in youth settings where there are a lot of youth, at OBGC, the Boys and Girls Clubs, the YMCA, and other parent groups. And then there are promotional tools also on the website for you to use. And I don't see my next slide, but my cheat sheet tells me my next slide should be the website. So let me go one more and see. No, my next slide. Well, let me go to this slide for you. As I mentioned, the website is the hub, and the website has two sections for youth and a section for adults. And so you, when you're up on the website, it's easy to see that you click on some bars and you go either for youth or you go to adults. And for youth, there are age-appropriate tips on what you can do if you're being bullied or if you witness bullying. You can ask the expert, and these ask the expert situations are taken from cartoons. The youth told us that they watch cartoons all the time, and that's where they would best receive messages. So the webisodes or the cartoons with characters. And then every month we list a profile of one of those cartoon characters, and they're facing new and different bullying situations. Now I'm going to go to my next slide. And again, for adults on the website, this is where there are tip sheets, there are downloadable materials, there are posters, as I mentioned, facts and figures. If you want to start assembling a team in your community, your institution, or your school, this is a place to go to get information. You can make the case, you can display and describe and utilize these tip sheets that tell what to do if a student is being bullied, what to do with a child who bullies, and then professional development video short conferences where you can take a look at, for instance, what a school nurse has done in a school setting as trying to assemble a team to prevent bullying in her school. The DVD toolkit, I want to mention that up on the website, and it seems to me that that is the one that is missing, so I'm going to give that to you verbally, www.stopbullyingnow.hrsa, so that's .hrsa.gov, .hrsa.gov. This toolkit, you can order the toolkit to be received free. Every U.S. middle school and elementary school has received or is receiving this month the video toolkit. There are PSAs, public service announcements, within this video toolkit. There's an instructor's or facilitator's guide on what to do with the toolkit in settings. And then up on the website also is an activities guide, which describes different settings in a community or in a school of how to use the materials that are on the web. And I really need to almost apologize that our website is chock full. It is getting fuller because we upgrade and update every other month. But we just have something going for helpfulness to schools and communities and organizations, and we kind of can't stop ourselves. So we are continuing to bring materials up to our website. Now, this is what's coming up next. Several new tip sheets will join the 40-plus that are up there. We do have a Spanish translation parallel website, so that for adults, if the Spanish translation has happened and it's on a parallel website. And then, much like the webcast today to spread the news and to get the word out, on April 16th, 2008, there'll be a Stop Bullying Now webcast, and we're going to feature, and much like we're doing today, how states, communities, schools have utilized our materials and have made a difference in the U.S. And so I'm going to stop there. I think that's my last slide. Oh, yes, here's my contact information. I would enjoy hearing from you, and please use my email address, and do visit the website at stopbullyingnow.hrsa.gov. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Before I introduce our next two speakers, I'd like to give a brief overview of how health departments around the country have addressed bullying prevention, and especially how they've integrated bullying prevention into their existing services. CSN recently released a document entitled Bullying Prevention, Examples of Health Department Activities, which summarizes what 16 state and one territorial health department are doing to address bullying prevention. This document is on our website, and I wanted to tell you we found a wide range of activities. For example, 15 are using school-based methods, mainly student trainings or promoting school climate change. 12 are part of coalitions, and 10 are involved in training for teachers, mental health workers, and other professionals. So these may be areas that you'd like to consider in your own state. There are other ways to address bullying prevention on the public health level, such as through state laws, as Stephanie mentioned, and also through state-selected performance measures as part of the Title V Maternal and Child Health Block Grant. In addition to having a law, there's one state, the state of Maine, that has a bullying prevention state-selected performance measure as part of their Title V Block Grant. And this can be an effective way to highlight the progress you're making around bullying prevention in your state. CSN is available to help you create performance measures on bullying prevention, either for the coming year or as part of the 2010 needs assessment process. So please feel free to contact me after this webinar for that assistance. Now I'm pleased to introduce two speakers from state maternal and child health programs. Arima Fobb, Director of the Division of Injury and Violence Prevention in the Virginia Department of Health, and Cynthia Collins, Program Manager for Child and Adolescent Health in the New Jersey Department of Health and Senior Services. They will describe how they've worked with local and state-level partners to prevent bullying in their states and the importance of bringing the public health perspective to this issue. In addition, Arima and Cynthia will speak about why they see bullying prevention as compelling for the maternal and child health audience. Arima will start.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Our involvement began about 4 or 5 years ago in our continuing efforts to extend our role in violence prevention. There was, as you've heard from Stephanie Brin and others, there has been ever-increasing information on the widespread health impact of bullying, on the interrelationship to depression, suicide, school shootings, sexual violence, and other emerging issues that we were already working on. We already had a lot of experience working on school-based programs, and in bullying prevention, effective prevention programs were available. So we could immediately see a benefit of adding our participation to existing efforts within Virginia and to be contributing in a meaningful way to youth violence prevention. What we did was, prior to really launching into interventions without any financial resources, we immediately started sharing the wonderful information that was available on bullying as a public health issue through list servers, mailings, at school health and safety workshops and conferences around Virginia. We were able to ask CSN staffers to come and present. We widely disseminated the HRSA bullying materials. And then in 2004, we started providing small dollar grants to community-based organizations in Virginia to see what they would come up with in terms of prevention projects and activities. And then really, as we started partnering and discussing this issue with others in Virginia, we recognized that it was time for us to throw our support behind the OLVEAS program. OLVEAS is a research-based bullying prevention program. It is evidence-based, and it offers a school-wide approach that has been shown to reduce bullying with interventions at the school, class, individual, and community level. There were already some schools and organizations in Virginia that were implementing OLVEAS, and we actually supported them with additional resources that they needed in terms of helped them sponsor a training for trainers to increase the available trainers in Virginia, and we supplied some of the schools and trainers with the necessary startup resources for the programs, videos, manuals, books, and training tools. At that time, we had started working on an ESCAPE grant, which is a CDC grant that states receive to start planning around child and adolescent violence prevention. An opportunity came up in the second year of that grant to apply for implementation funding, and we were one of two states that received implementation funding. We had numerous statewide partners, and everybody around the table was unanimous in their agreement to really, you know, to apply for this funding and use it to expand bullying prevention, and in particular, see whether we could get have a coordinated effort in the state to have schools begin expanding and implementing OLVEAS with fidelity. We do believe that our previous involvement in terms of information dissemination and some of the projects that we had done and the partnerships we developed, that those were instrumental in us obtaining the grant. What this opportunity has allowed us to do is to really expand OLVEAS across Virginia. We are partnering, actually, we're contracting with the Center for School Community Collaboration at Virginia Commonwealth University to coordinate this program. And schools are provided with training, consultation, and materials necessary to implement the program over 18 months. And we've seen some amazing things happen with what ends up being relatively small financial involvement. In year one of the project, we enabled 26 schools within 19 of Virginia school divisions to begin implementing this program. And currently, in year two, the project is supporting 45 schools in 17 school divisions. And 29 of these schools are in 6 school divisions that are expanding implementation of OLVEAS throughout their entire divisions. And 4 of these 6 school divisions are now implementing OLVEAS in all of their elementary and middle schools. And our program is reaching about 40,000 students. And we are moving into the last year of this project, and we'll be holding more trainers workshops and a showcase conference of successful school bullying prevention programs in Virginia. The project is being evaluated. We're collecting data on changes in bullying-related knowledge, attitudes, behaviors, and school and classroom practices from teachers, students, and the trainer consultants at each of the program's schools. Because really, there have been OLVEAS programs in place, and there are numerous OLVEAS programs that are not funded throughout our program, but we wanted to capture the impact of this and really demonstrate that it is possible for schools to expand this and implement it with fidelity and see the changes. We've partnered with a number of groups. Our division has had a long-standing partnership with the Department of Education, the Center for School Community Collaboration, the Department of Mental Health, our local community service boards, which are our local mental health agencies, school safety and juvenile justice programs out of our Department of Criminal Justice Services, the Governor's Office of Substance Abuse Prevention, and suicide crisis and prevention programs across the state. And we have collaborated over the past 14 years on activities of mutual interest, so other school-based injury and violence prevention projects, statewide task forces, and work groups on injury-specific projects in suicide, sexual assault, child abuse, teen driving, et cetera, and also on audience-specific projects that targeted adolescent health, children's health, or school health, for example, or projects that address similar risk and protective factors. So over the years, we have helped, they've helped us, and we have helped them. So it was a really natural partnership to continue to work together on this issue. And then our Department of Education puts an emphasis on best practices and model programs. And then also we had a boost with the state legislation that required schools to have character education programs that addressed bullying. How does the public health perspective bring something different to the table? I think although this is changing quite a lot, historically the education and criminal justice communities have seen bullying as more of an isolated behavior management issue, whereas public health providers view and take ownership for addressing the broader individual and societal health impacts. And to us, schools are one of several venues we work within to reach a particular population on life skills as a means of averting serious, costly health problems that impact all of us either directly or indirectly. We inform the violence prevention process by bringing in health and mental health data, information and research on the short and long-term health impacts of bullying, the relationship of bullying to suicide risk, depression, chronic disease, as opposed to looking at bullying or violence as solely a behavior management issue. And I have found that this additional information resonates with providers who receive it as individuals, parents, and community members, and they then see themselves as having more of a stake in addressing this problem. We also, as public health providers, have more direct access to specific bullying prevention resources, grants, materials, and information. For example, the Children's Safety Network information and CDC information, and the information that comes out of public health agencies and organizations for public health audiences. And so we can share this with our other partners. And in closing, I think that there is still much that needs to be done to prevent youth violence in general and bullying in particular. I believe that even with limited financial resources, MCH programs can contribute significantly. And we're fortunate because a growing knowledge base exists and many free educational resources are available. And I think through information dissemination and the provision of training and technical assistance, state and local health departments can extend the reach of the federal and national organizations that are doing the research that we can't do and that are developing wonderful materials and model programs when we might not be able to. Thank you.
Thank you. Cynthia is next.
Hello, everyone. I just want to start by saying how much I appreciate CSN giving me the opportunity to share New Jersey's involvement in bullying prevention from the perspective of our maternal, child, and community health program. And just before going into this overview, to share with you that the only funding source that I have for what I'm doing is currently an allocation of preventive health and health services block grant money. We have no state funds to support our efforts, and New Jersey has quite a deficit at this point, so it's unlikely that we'll see any state funds coming down the road. We also do not have coordinated school health funds, although we have applied for the recent cooperative agreement. Our strategies to address bullying in our state fall basically into two main areas. The first that we're looking at is building state capacity through partnership, and our Department of Education has been our strongest partner probably for well over 10 years at this point. In New Jersey, we had an anti-bullying law that was enacted in September of 2002 and took effect September of 2003. And this was a very important policy issue action to have taken place, because New Jersey has over 600 school districts, all with their own home rule. So to have, you know, a law that would apply across all of these school districts was a very important action on the part of our legislature. Also, in our safe and drug-free schools within DOE, which is funded under Title IV, although our New Jersey bullying law encourages the use of evidence-based programs, our safe and drug-free schools requires evidence-based promising programs or practices. And they actually, when they're applying for their title funding, the individual school districts have to select from a drop-down menu of programs or practices that they'll be utilizing. And that's their only choice. Safe and Drug-Free Schools has also provided trainings that my grantees have been able to benefit from. Typically, they're offered to school personnel and school administrators, but because of the work of my grantees at the community level, they have access to trainings to increase their competencies. And just in the past year, we had trainings on the better use of data, practical needs assessment, developing logic models, and ways to strengthen collaborative efforts. Our DOE also has an memorandum of agreement with Rutgers University in introducing social emotional learning and character development education. And again, you know, it's been a win situation from the health department standpoint, because we've been able to bring our community-based partners who are working with schools to take advantage and become pilots for introducing social emotional learning approaches in their with their partners who are in the classrooms. And lastly, there's a memorandum of understanding with the Violence Institute of New Jersey, with the University of Medicine and Dentistry at New Jersey. And a pilot project was just completed in November of 2007, and that report will be pending, but the project was Positive Student Discipline, a reform demonstration project. And so we're trying to share information with one of our projects, which you'll see a little later, on suspension alternative program, which is also, rather than a punitive, it's a preventive and positive approach to as an alternative to suspension. We also partner with New Jersey After 3 program, which is an after-school program that's been recent as of October of 2007, and this nonprofit agency has 108 site locations reaching 15,000 students, and it's different than a lot of after-school programs in that it's not a drop-in site. The students that attend these attend every day, 2 hours a day. The first hour is for homework mentoring, and the second hour is on a focused area, and one of them is definitely violence prevention. And so we're working together now to introduce programs into their middle schools through our adolescent health program. And then we also have the resources of the State Bar Foundation, which is conducting free statewide trainings for educators and administrators, and their foundation is also based on Olveus. And we have some potential collaborative opportunities coming up in 2008. There's a newly formed group outside of group government that's going to be an advocate group for adolescent health in New Jersey, and obviously, it's looking holistically at all of the issues, one of which is violence. And where we're looking to collaborate with the Department of Children and Families is basically working with our youth advisory groups that are through my grantees and their youth advisory groups, and blending them so that they can be synergistic in terms of their impact on bullying prevention in the communities where there's advisory groups from both of our departments. And we're also looking for some potential work with the New Jersey Coalition for Bullying Awareness and Prevention that's existed since 2004. And again, this is just an outside group that has been focused on bullying awareness and prevention. The second strategy, you know, after looking at building some of our own capacity, is what we're doing to try to build community-level capacity through partnership. And we've had an initiative called the Community Partnership for Healthy Adolescents. This is where I'm using my Preventive Health Health Services Block Grant monies to fund 8 communities, where we provide the infrastructure of 1 full-time coordinator in each of these communities, who mobilizes the community partners and their resources to jointly address an identified issue that's priority for that community. So they'll develop an adolescent health plan. They have goals, objectives, activities, and outcome. And because they're engaging community partners, the approach is more comprehensive. And they're pulling the partners so that individual youth are reached, that it's that, you know, multiple tier effect with looking at the students, peers, and their families, the community, and the schools. And if there needs to be some addressing of policy, they'll address that as well. The strategies vary from community to community, and I think a lot of you probably have very similar types of activities taking place. But what I'm particularly proud of is how we've been able to meaningfully engage youth through youth focus groups, youth advisory groups, and the implementation of a small mini grant, which is we call For Youth by Youth, which we give a couple thousand dollars to the community youth, and they have to conceive the idea, they plan it, they implement it, they do some basic evaluation with the guidance of a advisor. I'm sorry, I was behind a slide. So these were just some of the various strategies that were taking place in the community. So when we look at, well, why is MCCH involved in bullying prevention? And I think Stephanie, you know, mentioned first and foremost in one of her slides, when you're looking at the health consequences of bullying, and that there's significant evidence that, you know, kids who are bullied or victim, they're more prone to illness, they have higher risk for injuries, for suicide attempts, for mortality, they'll drop out of school, they'll use drugs or other substances. And all of this basically will impact on us achieving our Healthy People 2010 goals, as well as our 21 critical health objectives for adolescents. So, you know, I don't think that we can even question that there's a role for us here. Public health is focused on prevention, not punishment, and certainly there are changes in criminal justice and juvenile justice and looking at youth, you know, more holistically, but traditionally it has been more of a individual punishment. And unfortunately, much of the money is very much directed towards intervention and treatment, and much less of the money is towards prevention. And so, you know, public health does need, since our focus is prevention, to step up and take the lead in this area. We know that we don't focus as much on individual youth behavior. It is in the broader context of the social environmental climates that the behavior is taking place. And whenever we're addressing issues, we're looking at, you know, the climate of the school and the community that the youth, you know, are growing up in. We also, as public health professionals, view youth in the context of the whole person. We have the knowledge of what information and what activities are developmentally appropriate for kids at different ages. You know, we have appreciation of the research that demonstrates the interrelationship of factors that are contributing to at-risk behaviors. You know, and we're very much focused on building skills and competencies through positive youth development strategies. So, you know, last but not least, as was mentioned earlier by both speakers, you know, we have the ability to share much of the resources that we have at our disposal from our health end to coordinate those resources with our partners, look at what's happening at the national level, and share that, you know, with our colleagues at the state level as well as the community level, sharing our knowledge, our expertise, the health data that we collect and evaluation so that we could show, you know, that our efforts are being effective and reducing violence with youth. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to all of our presenters. We are actually running a few minutes ahead of time, and we have time for a few questions. So as I mentioned earlier, if you'd like to ask a question, please type it into the direct messaging window in Illuminate. To do this, type your message in the text box on the left side of the page. And again, if you're viewing the slides in the whiteboard view, you'll want to change your view back to the default in order to see the text box window. If we run out of time, the speakers and I will respond to the remaining questions via email, and the responses will be archived on our website. Currently, there are three questions, so I'll get started with those, and people are welcome to ask some others. The first question is, has anyone seen a connection between bullying and domestic or family violence? Most definitions of bullying exactly match the definition of a batterer, but I'm still looking for the link. Are bullies more likely to become batterers? Are batterers kids more likely to be bullies, et cetera? Who'd like to respond?
Well, this is Stephanie. I'll just take a quick stab at it. There's not a lot of studies with regard to bullying. There is one that's in process at the Southern Illinois University, I believe it is, a CDC grant, that's looking at sexual abuse and bullying and kind of crossroads there. But that's just getting underway. And I did want to just add a few things to say that I didn't get an opportunity to say. So basically, nothing that I can point to that says that, you know, there's a study or research. We know that behavior and training from parenting skills and the variety of parenting skills and disciplines used is a factor in how children behave and how they interact with others. And we know that harsh punishment in families is frequently linked to children who bully. And I do want to direct you to our website because the studies, that one that I just mentioned, is up on the website as it relates to bullies and children who bully. And we try not to say bullies, but rather children who bully. So it's the behavior that for parenting that we can point to that is critical and important, and that we probably need to do a little bit better job in helping parents know how to parent and develop better parenting skills. I would mention that teen dating violence and gang prevention are linked to bullying, but again, not a lot of research has been done. So I guess I'd stop there.
Okay, why don't I move on to the second question? There's some recent research, specifically the Journal of Adolescent Health from 2007, to suggest that Olveus is more effective among white students than other races or ethnicities. Was Virginia's experience at all affected by the level of heterogeneity or homogeneity of the schools that implemented it? Before someone answers that question, I just also wanted to note There's another question asking for what OLVEA stands for, so perhaps one of the speakers can respond to that too.
Okay, this is Arima Saab, and OLVEA is the, can you hear me? OLVEA is the name of the developer of the OLVEA school-based bullying prevention program. So that's his name. It is a model program. Clemson University coordinates a lot of the activities, the OLVEA activities across the U.S., and you can find information on it on the SAMHSA Best Practices website, the OJJDP, and U.S. Department of Education website as well, and it was one of the blueprints for violence prevention. In response to Sarah Romowski's question, we put out an open request for participation to schools across Virginia, regardless of, we didn't consider geography or demographic factors in who we put that out to. I think it will be interesting to look as all of our data comes in on what their experiences have been with the program and whether it's been different depending on the racial or ethnic makeup of the students. Within the OLVEA program, there is a pre and a post questionnaire, and the schools use the information from the questionnaires to identify what their hot spots are and some of their specific issues related to bullying. And then they also, OLVEA offers a flexible framework where there are specific classroom activities developed at the school level. So there is an opportunity for school staff to identify activities that are more relevant to their population. So I feel that there's an opportunity to make OLVEA programs relevant to whatever context, but I think it will be interesting to see as we look at some of the data on the difficulties in fidelity, whether that factored into that. And then as far as actual changes in bullying behavior at the school level, our questionnaire is going to pick up on that.
Great, thank you. Our third question asks, how has having a bullying prevention law been helpful?
Well, this is Cynthia. For the very fact, in New Jersey, we have all of these school districts, over 600 of them, and our bullying law has required them to have a reporting system that is collected at the Department of Education to monitor, violence types of behaviors. I think it across the board because it defines bullying, because the behaviors are addressed in terms of a consequence, and that the school acts on those consequences and that information is reported. There's a feedback loop for that law helping each individual school district that's trying to address it uniform throughout the state.
And this is Arima. I think similarly in Virginia, our law that requires character education programs and requires those programs to address the inappropriateness of bullying has supported our efforts. So schools are looking for ways to comply with the law, and our Department of Education is providing strong leadership in encouraging them to adopt best practice evidence-based approaches.
Thank you. Our next question asks, can you please comment on cyberbullying?
I'll take a quick comment. This is Stephanie about please visit our website where we have a tip sheet about cyberbullying. The Clemson University faculty who advise our have advised our campaign since 2001, they've actually written a textbook as well as articles. Dr. Susan Limber, L-I-M-B-E-R, is the author. So the comment would be pretty long if I really made a comment, but her research and the book points out the importance of parents recognizing that students and young students are on the internet, and also recognizes the need to supervise. And also our tip sheets will talk about ways to, if necessary, document that cyberbullying is taking place by printing out messages and such. And I think right now we've noticed it growing very rapidly. And so any of us who work in health and safety and with youth, I think it would be important for you to take a look at our tip sheets and do some quick reading, so that when you're asked to respond to families or know how to talk with children and youth about this, you'll be able to respond. Again, the StopBullyingNow.HRSA.gov website does have tip sheets, and Dr. Susan Limber is the one who's authored the book.
Thank you. The next question is there any research on sources of bullying behaviors?
Sources of bullying behavior.
Yeah, and followed that is a name, but it doesn't look like the name of the person who put in the question, which is Iwona, pardon me for the pronunciation, Borek Tilchati.
So perhaps it goes back to children who bully. Do you think that's where that's going?
I think so.
And we know that, first of all, there's not a profile of a child who is the child who will be bullied. They are in all shapes and sizes and ethnicities and races. And some of them, the children who are bullied, appear maybe to be more timid or shy or quiet or more of a loner. Again, on our website, it'll describe two children who bully and some of their characteristics. They may be bigger in size or older. They may come from a home with more harsh or corporal punishment. There's not a huge, we do worry about children who bully because they often face convictions three times the rate. So we're concerned both about both children and about both youth. And again, I think the website will offer tip sheets where all of you listening in today can kind of get 101 and 102 bullying experience and information.
Thank you. I think we're going to have time for one more question, and I noticed that there are three questions altogether. So before I read the last question that we can address, I'm going to read the two that we won't be able to get to today, but we can email responses. Actually, one of them is just the information that Dorothy Espelage is doing research on sexual harassment, bullying, and sexual assault dating violence. I think that was in response to an earlier question. There's also a question, are there upcoming federal funding opportunities in the near future? Oh, and one other question has just come in. Does anyone have suggestions on getting our legislators on board? Pennsylvania has no law that we know of. So those three items will need to respond offline. But the last question that we'll be able to respond to right now is, both programs have funded projects in the community. Were any directed to unserved or underserved populations specific?
This is Arima. When we put out the call for participation in Olvea's programs, the participation depended more on the readiness of the school than, you know, because there's quite a complicated composition of a planning committee as opposed to the, again, the demographics. However, I will say that we have a broad mix of urban and rural, small and large school divisions. So I think as our reports come out, we'll be able to take a look at some of the differential experience program.
This is Cynthia. When we put out our competitive request for applications, our standard wording is basically geared towards communities with greater risk, whether they're socioeconomic or behavioral or criminal. So we're always addressing the needs of populations at risk. So our grantees tend to be in city areas.
Thank you. That is all the time we have for questions. I want to thank everyone for your attention and your participation. Tomorrow you will receive an email asking you to answer a few brief questions about this webinar. We rely on your feedback in order to plan future webinars, so please take a few moments to respond. In addition, the email will include the full text of the article, Anti-Bullying Legislation, a Public Health Perspective, that was discussed earlier today. It will also include my contact information, so you can be in touch with me if you'd like more information or technical assistance around bullying prevention in your state or territory. And lastly, it will have links to the Stop Bullying Now website and the Children's Safety Network website, where you can find additional information about bullying prevention. Thank you again, and have a great day.